Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Good evening. You are listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I am joined here this evening with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. And we are here again on this Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. as we are every week at this time, Central Standard Time, to keep you updated on the grassroots movement here in Missouri and beyond. Thanks for being with me tonight, Cindy.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Okay, Cindy. We are rolling again. Busy week. Did you dig out of the snow? Because in my area, we had a lot of, we had over a foot of snow here in St. Charles County.
We did too in Franklin County. We had a lot of snow.
It was
pretty amazing.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we had kind of a rush trip home. We were down at the lake taking care of some business, and Saturday night we were sitting there relaxing, and I checked my phone, and they said we were going to get 10 inches of snow, and I said, oh my, I think we need to go. So we packed up, and we got home about 2 o'clock in the morning just ahead of the storm. So
oh my gosh.
We're fine.
Yeah, I like the snow. I mean, I don't have to go anywhere. I'm kind of loving, you know, I like, we light a fire in the fireplace and we just let it go. But we haven't had this kind of snow in the St. Louis area, and I can't remember, probably 20, 30 years. I mean, it's just been forever. That much snow in such a short period of time, and actually digging out of the snow was kind of an interesting situation. But otherwise, it was good. You know, we enjoyed it, and now we're rolling. Interestingly enough, the snow came and stopped just as the Missouri legislature was winding up their spring break. So they all went back to Jefferson City on Monday, and, you know, maybe the snow was a way to kind of stall that for one more day. I kind of like to think so. I'm not crazy about the legislators being in Jefferson City any more than they absolutely have to be. But
no, I think that our freedoms are better protected when they're not in session.
Well, yeah, we're gonna find out about a little bit more about that tonight. We've got Tom Martz will be on with us from Locke and Smith, and he pulled out a couple of really interesting bills. I haven't had a chance to read all of it because he just gave it to me a few minutes before we went on the air, but there's a Senate joint resolution to put a sales tax on the ballot, and we'll get some more details about that from him. And I mean, this is sales tax year. I cannot believe, with the economic climate being what it is in Missouri and across the country, that these politicians are still trying to put sales taxes on the bill. And I mean, and as we know, because we've talked to Americans for Prosperity, they've, I think, identified it somewhere between 200 and 250 ballot initiatives in April for sales tax increases. And you know, the House of Representatives is also trying to put some hefty sales tax increases on the ballot for road improvements and things like that. And, you know, it'll just be really, really interesting to see if the lemmings out there are going to just vote for it because people will say, well, you don't want your roads crumbling, you know, you don't want any
right.
You know, got it, you know, because I mean, people just buy that stuff, they suck it up with a straw.
Does it make you a little angry, Lisa? I mean,
yeah.
It does me, to be true confession, that I'm not seeing any significant cuts in spending that they really don't need to be doing, and yet they keep trying to find ways to raise revenue so that they can, I hate to say it, but I suspect pad the coffers of big donors and people that will do them favors and so forth and so on. And I'm becoming pretty skeptical about all of it, and that's just how I feel. I mean, come on. We're all out here struggling, trying to make ends meet, cutting our budgets big time, and trying to stretch our food dollars and everything else. And you really want to raise the sales taxes on us, really?
Yeah. And, oh, and I mean, I don't know about you. I don't understand how this works. So maybe somebody can explain it to me. But, okay, we have an economy that has, it has, as far as I can see, has just tanked. I mean, I really don't believe that the jobs numbers are what they are. I think the jobs numbers are inflated and deflated, you know, manipulated. Companies have downsized their structure, and people are going on. If they have jobs, they're working part-time now. They're not working necessarily full-time, many of them. They're getting their benefits cut. And, you know, I don't understand how – I mean, people have got to be – their disposable income has got to be going down. I mean, we're paying $4 a gallon for gasoline. You know, food prices are through the roof. And I don't understand how people can think that the government needs this money.
I don't either.
At some point, they kind of wise up.
Another thing, too, is a lot of the jobs that are being created are government jobs. Well, now, let's take a step back from that and really look at that. Who's paying those salaries and arguably, eventually, the pensions and all of the little perks and sweet things that go with government employment? Who's paying for that? It's coming out of our pockets.
Right.
And those aren't, in my opinion, those are not real jobs.
And I think a third of the workforce across the country is being paid for by the government.
Yes.
So,
it's a facade of
right.
of stability that doesn't really exist because the taxpayers are being
mm-hmm.
crushed.
Absolutely. And John Lilly, also from Lock & Smith, is going to be on with us in a little while. Speaking of just being angry at the government and seeing how they overinflate and bloat their bureaucracy, he's going to be on to talk about a bill, House Bill 631. And I was reading through this. It's a 15-page bill co-sponsored by our illustrious House leader, Tim Jones, sponsored by Representative Elmer. This bill is a bill that – It just reeks of teachers union to me. This is a bill that mandates specific guidelines for how school districts shall hire, shall evaluate, shall fire, shall not fire teachers. I mean, it's 15 pages of I'm sure what they're going to describe as educational reform, but I mean this. You know, it's going to eliminate the need. It does eliminate the need for school boards, and it just is bloated. It tells them that you cannot, how they can and cannot look at it, their employees to pick and choose people for firing or layoffs or downsizing or leaves of absence. Excuse me, I can't speak this evening. So, you know, with all of that coming through and with the constant call for tax increases, and I know the school district where I live is wanting to have a tax increase, and surrounding school districts have been having tax increases. It just never ends. It just never ends. So have you been following the Supreme Court, the marriage debate? Have you listened to any of the testimony or any of the arguments at all this last week?
I've been following it, but I can't say that I've listened to any of the arguments. True confession, I'm operating in the dark right now.
Oh, okay.
I lost my computer a week ago, so it's been kind of crazy.
Okay, so I'm going to make a prediction here because I'm very cynical about the judicial system anyway. I think they're going to go for gay marriage. I think they're going to just fly, you know, it'll probably be a split 5-4 thing in Kennedy.
Yeah, they're going to violate the 10th Amendment. They're going to go against the will of the people of California. They're going to overturn their vote in a ballot initiative that passed handily in California and hand them gay marriage on a silver platter.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
That's what I think.
And it's really a shame because the Supreme Court should be, their job is to look after constitutional issues and make sure they're not supposed to legislate from the bench. They're supposed to rule according to the constitutionality of things. And if the state of California and the people of California said no gay marriage in our state, that should stand.
Right. Yep, I'm with you on that one.
Special interests with their money shouldn't be able to come along behind and file all kinds of costly lawsuits that the state is now having to fight and to defend the voters of California. That's just ridiculous. But that's the world we're living in right now.
Well, this is really about, it's about putting everybody on the tax rolls. you know, and collecting benefits and not collecting benefits and that kind of thing. This is about, doesn't have anything to do with marriage or any of those kinds of issues. It's taxes all the way.
Or what's best for children or any of the above. It's just, you know, follow the money trail.
Yep, follow the money trail. Well, okay, so another issue that, you know, when you're watching the talk, I always watch the Talking Heads on Sunday, and I was listening to, or watching sort of with one eye, Fox News Sunday, and Rand Paul, and I've been watching Rand Paul because I think Rand Paul I think he's going to be the next presidential nominee. I don't think he's going to be a Republican nominee. I think he's going to be an independent nominee because by the time the next election gets around here, they're going to have put him through the meat grinder. So the Republican Party will not allow him to be the nominee. But anyway, so here's the deal with Rand Paul. I mean, I think he is a radical libertarian. I think he's a closet libertarian Republican person. And he made a comment on Fox News Sunday about the drug issue and the libertarians, for me, and libertarians, you can correct me if you want, that's fine, but I think what the deal is that makes them so radical to me is they're just so radical on everything, and legalizing drugs is a big sticking point, and I think it will be a big sticking point with a lot of conservatives out there. So anyway, I've been kind of wanting to know where he falls on the drug issue, and he made a statement on Fox News Sunday, and we'll play that right now.
The main thing I've said is not to legalize them, but not to incarcerate people for extended period of time. So I'm working with Senator Leahy. We have a bill on mandatory minimums. There are people in jail for 37, 50, 45 years for nonviolent crimes, and that's a huge mistake. Our prisons are full of nonviolent criminals. I don't want to encourage people to do it. I think even marijuana is a bad thing to do. I think it takes away your incentive to work and show up and do the things that you should be doing. I don't think it's a good idea. I don't want to promote that, but I also don't want to put people in jail who make a mistake. There are a lot of young people who do this, and then later on in their 20s, they grow up and get married, and they quit doing things like this. I don't want to put them in jail and ruin their life. Look, the last two presidents could conceivably have been put in jail for their drug use, and I really think, you know, look what would have happened. It would have ruined their lives. They got lucky, but a lot of poor kids, particularly in the inner city, don't get lucky. They don't have good attorneys, and they go to jail for these things, and I think it's a big mistake.
Okay. So here's my deal with Rand Paul. This is my prediction. Okay, I think he's just a wild, crazy libertarian, and I don't really have a problem with that, except, you know, I mean, there's a boundary issue. We're going to talk about cultural issues later on. Gina Loudon's going to be on the program with us, and she's been fighting that culture war, and she's got a great story to tell us about what's going on with her this week. But I think culture issues are going to be huge in the next 4 years, and I think the drug situation, legalizing drugs, and I've already seen some Tea Party folks come out in favor of legalizing marijuana and that kind of thing. I think it's going to be a big, big deal, and I think it's something that we're going to have to get over in the next 4 years, because we have to find a candidate that's going to be able to oppose the run-of-the-mill establishment Republican that they're going to put up, you know, and not let us choose the right candidate for. It's not going to be winnable. Rand Paul's going to be the guy, I think. So here's my deal with Rand Paul and his drug issue. I've kind of seen him waver the last couple of months on the drug issue. I think they're kind of floating it out there. They're taking a barometer of where the people are on it. For him to come out and say what he just said, where he is, you know, he's not for legalizing drugs, but he wants to relax the laws on it so that, you know, the punishments are not so harsh. I have a lot of opinions on that, but what I think they're trying to do is they're trying to lead the public back into an area where the libertarians can follow Rand Paul, and then the conservatives can also get on it by not completely legalizing drugs. What do you think?
I think that's exactly right. I think it's a step towards legalizing drugs and towards not. Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I think that's what they're doing to take us in that direction. So we'll see.
Well, what I would really like to see in this area, because, you know, I've heard a couple of people make commentary on this just in the last week or so, where they've gone from let's legalize the drugs to let's just relax it, let's leave it illegal, let's create penalties for it. What I want to see is for them to come up with a specific plan on, you know, okay, so if you don't want somebody who's carrying a minor amount of drugs to be busted, you know, for 35 years because they have been busted for drugs, what is your plan to penalize them so that you know, maybe they're not due in 35 years, but maybe, you know, maybe they're spending the next 3.5 years on the side of the road picking up trash in
well,
a pink
yeah.
jumpsuit,
you know, they,
with fur on it.
I agree,
you know?
Lisa. If they can show us a good plan for dealing with some of the penal system, and certainly there is a need to reform some of that, and it's just ridiculous. And, you know, someone who is picked up on a minor marijuana charge that's in jail for umpteen whatever years, and then some child molester that's free and three, I have issues with that. So, but our judicial system is really messed up, and our penal system is really messed up. So
well, our judicial system is messed up
that.
Because we don't
but,
have elected officials holding them account to account.
Correct.
They answer to the House and to the Senate.
Right.
And on a state level and on a federal level. So what I really want to see, okay, Rand Paul, if you're listening, what I want to see is you coming up with a strong alternative to holding the judicial system to account. If you want to put things into perspective to where, you know, our laws are you know, valid and just for the penalty, you know, the penalty shall fit the crime kind of a thing, then I want to see people holding those kinds of things to account. I want a plan. So what I want you to come out strong against crime. We don't want to legalize drugs because legalizing drugs is bad. So come up with an alternative plan. If you don't want these folks sitting in jail for 35 years, what are you going to do to them? So come up with something specific so that I know, A, that you're strong on crime, you're strong on monitoring the judiciary, you're strong on – because you're already telling me you're strong on the Constitution. You need to be strong on all these other things as well. That's
yep.
what I want to see. Okay. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk to Gina Loudon on the culture wars. This is part of the culture war, and I'm sure we'll be debating these issues a lot over the next several years. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots, and we are so blessed tonight to have with us a super patriot, strong, fighting, cultural battle warrior woman with us, Dr. Gina Loudon of the Dr. Gina Show. She's based out in California now, although we know her from her founding days here at the St. Louis Tea Party and all of the efforts that she put in there to get the movement going. Gina, thanks for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. You are the culture warriors, and I appreciate everything you guys do. And the fact that you guys are continuing the fight there in Missouri, I'm watching, and I am so proud of the way that Missouri conservatives have handled themselves in recent months. I tell you, when you live on the left coast, as I do, and you look at Missouri's politics, it's a beautiful picture. So I really appreciate everything you guys do.
Well, what a culture shock it must be from moving to the Midwest. You lived in the South for a little while, and now you are way out in California where things are really interesting. I can't even imagine what that's like to go out there and make that adjustment.
Yeah, election night was really pathetic because literally on election night, I stood at the hotel where the GOP was having the party. We lost virtually everything, up and down the ticket here in California. And we all worked really hard. And so, you know, thank God that Missouri delivered some victories and to watch you all continue to fight. There is no hope on the coast if the heartland doesn't hold its own. And that's why I so appreciate everything you all are doing. And even when it feels futile, just know that the people on the coast are watching you and they still know you're the same ones.
Okay,
so
well, that's good news.
Keep that
because,
up. Because,
yeah, I mean, we don't really feel like we did very well here during the last election, but we pulled a few things out, I guess. So, okay, Gina, I'm going to get right to it. You know, the last week or so, we've had a lot of conservatives scratching our head out here, and a lot of people have been asking you why, Gina. Why did you do it? Why did you do it, Gina? Why did you go on Wife Swap?
Yeah, well, I wrote a book called Ladies and Gentlemen, and I talked about engaging the culture in every format that God provides. And I even have a self-test in the back of my book talking about how conservatives can really take into account what are your skills, what are your gifts, what are your talents, and how might God best use you. And then I think if we're going to call ourselves culture warriors, we have to be willing to take that risk when the time and the opportunity presents itself. And so I stood and I looked at this opportunity and I prayed hard and I thought, am I going to do this? And if I do this, then I may take a risk and it may be embarrassing, it may be humiliating, I may not like the outcome, but if I don't take the risk, I for sure know that when the lamestream media, as they do, continues to ignore conservatives, we have some of that fault in our own camp if we're not willing to even engage when we're invited. And so I decided to engage because we were invited, and I felt like I have a message that I feel passionately about, and if I could go on this show and be myself, might they skew it? Yes. Might I be sorry ultimately? Yes, but I could only ever know if I took that chance. And I followed in the footsteps of my pastor, Pastor Jim Garlow of Skyline Church, and he is the guy who, you know him, he's the one who looked down the barrel at the IRS and said, come sue me. If you don't like me preaching my politics from the pulpit, if you believe when I got a white collar that I signed away my right to the First Amendment, you're wrong, come sue me. And guess what? The IRS will never come sue Jim Garlow and Skyline Church or any of the other thousands of pastors across the country who have followed his lead, because they know they'll lose, and then pastors will go off completely preaching the truth from the pulpit. And so I watched him go on The Daily Show and watched him go on MSNBC and watched him go on The Colbert Report. And he, you know, did they sometimes try to make a fool of him? Of course. But did he hold his own? Yes. And did the message translate? I felt like it did. So I saw this as an opportunity.
Okay, so you are immersed in California. It's the epicenter of all things media. Most of the message comes out of either California or New York, and you're right there. Okay, so deciding to go on a reality TV show like this, I would think would give you the opportunity to put a message out there that they don't see very often. So when you decided to go on this reality TV show and follow your mentors, your pastor, to kind of get that message out there, how effective do you think that you were in bringing that conservative message out to the world at large, who's not getting that message on a daily basis based on what's coming out of New York and L.A.?
Well, we'll certainly know more about that after tomorrow night, won't we? But in the meantime, you know, I really thought, you know, I can write my book, and 9/10 or more of the people who ever read my book are going to be people who already agree with me. On your show, Sad But True, and my show the same way, you know, the people that are going to watch it and listen to it are going to be people that agree with us. I go on Fox News, I go on Fox Business, and again, it's the same people. We are in an echo chamber. We are preaching to the choir. And so this was an opportunity for me to, I had no idea what I would encounter. And to be honest with you, I really thought I would get there and it would be an occupier. I really thought they're going to put a Tea Partier up against an occupier. How simple is that? And that's really what I thought. I had no idea what I was going to encounter, and I didn't know until I walked in that home. And that part of the reality was true. I really did not have any idea, and I really didn't know how it would go. Maybe I would know ahead or I wouldn't, but I didn't have any idea until I was on that show that I was going to be facing something that, to me, was flagrantly wrong. I've joked in my life about I need a wife, but I can tell you, after watching the way after watching the way this guy has treats women and the respect that cannot be there when the marriage God intended just is lost on a home, then I could see that this is why God put me in this situation right now. And so we'll see after tomorrow night. I was given the opportunity to preview it, and so I have a little bit of an idea how it's going to go. But and I can't give away many secrets, but I can tell you that it's funny. And I think as conservatives, I think we are really afraid of being laughed at. I think when it comes right down to our core, that's it, because we know that what our views are, and we're so afraid that the liberals are just going to laugh. You know what? We've got to lighten up, and we've got to be able to laugh at ourselves too, and to have a sense of humor. And that's the attitude I'm going into this with. I have always been able to laugh at myself because I'm too ADD not to be able to be made fun of, and I always have been. So this is no different than that. And you know, the liberals, the truth is, they're going to laugh at us anyway. So right. We might as well be delivering our message while we're getting laughed at.
Okay. Well, and I think it's very, very interesting that the timing of this show is airing the very week that the Supreme Court is defining marriage.
Isn't that interesting, Lisa? And you know what's really, everybody keeps asking me, you know, do you think that this was planned at ABC? I don't know, but if I'm the hard left, especially if I'm the statist left that you and I battle every day, I certainly would not want to put a case of polygamy on television and try to make the argument for gay marriage, because the gay folks I know, they certainly don't want to be compared to a polygamist. That's a completely different thing than what we're seeing argued before the Supreme Court. And certainly, I think, dilutes the message on the other side if that was their intention. So I'm thinking that wasn't intentional at all, but we'll find out. We'll see how it plays out. I sure can't predict the future.
Okay, well, as a conservative, though, Gina, okay, so this is a statement. You've made a great statement here. You and John are very strong in your faith. You've raised your children strong in your faith. You homeschool your kids. I know you, so I know that you are very grounded in your conservative values in every aspect of your life, okay? But you are trying to reach not the left, not the right. You're trying to go out there and get that middle ground of folks that I guess you would call independent, for lack of a better word, I can't think of it. But you're trying to put your values and your lifestyle out there and sell that to that middle ground of folks out there. And even though, you know, the polygamy issue is different than the gay marriage issue, the conservatives really are at this time trying to present a very strong foundation of what traditional marriage is. Do you think that you were able to provide any of that kind of atmosphere on Thursday? Will we see any of that?
I certainly hope that is the message that is conveyed. I hope that instead of more than honestly that imposing my values, my goal is never that. My goal is not even that on my show. My goal is really the dialogue, because, see, I think the truth is completely self-evident, and I think when conservatives go out there and just talk about common sense American values, I think that resonates with people. So I don't think we have to be afraid of our views, and I don't think we even have to try to proselytize or evangelize our views. I really don't see it that way. I really see the important question being, can we dialogue? Can we have the conversation? Can we start the conversation? What I wanted to communicate when I did Wife Swap was to say, you know, I'm willing to talk about this. I'm willing to discuss this. I'm willing to hold out that I might even be wrong. Show me how I'm wrong, and then we'll discuss it. And I really believe that our ideas prevail when that dialogue takes place. Now, the left always talks about this civil discourse, but they never often want to participate in it. And so my goal was, you know, if you have an opportunity, I would say to any conservative out there, to have that civil dialogue with the other side, that is an opportunity presented to you, and it's a call to you to answer it. And even if you might be laughed at, even if you might be made a fool, even if your ideas might be might come off strange to somebody, living in California, I can tell you that one in particular person comes to mind, and I've had her on my show, and I call her Anita Gunn. She works in the film industry, and she's undercover as a conservative, and she's a member of this conservative organization that I'm a member of that has a whole bunch of conservatives inside of Hollywood, all in the entertainment business, thousands of us that come together and talk about how Hollywood is, you know, completely owned by the statists, and how we can help to try to plant some seeds to change some minds. And you really get a big picture of this when you live here close to Hollywood and you're dealing with these people every day who are still in the closet as conservatives. And what happened to them? And that's what I keep trying to get at. What happened to my friend Anita Gunn that turned her into a conservative, a pro-choice, Jewish, liberal Hollywood insider? What
wow.
happened to her? What happened to her was that she related to someone like me who she just saw herself reflected in, and for one time didn't see the painting that the left wants to paint of us, but saw a real person, heard their arguments, was invited to engage in the dialogue, and lo and behold, she is a conservative. She's even come around on the pro-life issue at this point, which is amazing to me. So I deal with those people every day, and those are the people that I am trying to get to their hearts, because they are the cultural influencers. Hollywood is. We can't deny it.
Absolutely. So, okay, so going on Wife Swap, doing this reality TV show, putting your conservative values out there for America to see, there's going to be a lot of debate in the next 4 years about how much do cultural issues affect legislative issues. How do you feel about that?
By cultural issues, I don't think there's any issue that's a legislative issue that isn't based on cultural issues. Every single day, things are splattered across our television and our internet, and it absolutely affects the way we think. It not only affects the way we think, it affects the way we vote. We have low information voters that could pay 100% of their attention to Hollywood and pay zero attention to conservative talk radio like the quality that you're putting out every single day. And so we have to somehow speak to those people and get them to start thinking for themselves. And I think when we've done that, we have a lot better chance of winning the battle. And I know one thing for sure, Lisa, if we don't take these risks, we will lose. Andrew Breitbart said it, and it's mm-hmm. absolutely true, and we have to answer that call.
Absolutely. We have a caller. Will you take a caller?
Of course.
Okay, hold on. Okay, we have a caller, Lynn. Lynn, you're on the air. Would you like to ask Dr. Gina a question?
Oh, no. Actually, this is Laura in St. Louis. I think you've got a different line, but can I keep talking? Or?
Sure, please do.
Okay, all right. Hi, Gina. Well, I just want to say that I'm proud of you. I know that's a hard thing to do. I've been in that position before, not anything like that at all, but, you know, where people are criticizing, you know, what you're saying. And, you know, and I think, too, the first thing is I don't understand. Most of the people here, I want to tell you that I know, are behind you 100%, but I know that there are a couple people that are, you know, kind of being critical, but we haven't even seen the show yet, and so I think we ought to wait till the video is rolling before we start judging. And the other thing and this isn't to Gina, this is really to the other listeners, and I just hope that, you know, we, whatever happens, I think we look at this critically and understand what the messages are, because so often we see conservatives attacking other conservatives, and we need to be supporting each other, and we need to extend grace, and we need to try to serve, you know, as testimony to our faith and our conservative values. And if we're attacking someone who's representing it, it's really kind of like, to me, we're attacking ourselves in a way. So anyway, I just, whenever, you know, we've got people standing for our Christian and conservative values, I think we need to get behind them and support them. So I'm with you, Gene. I'm proud of you. So
thank you, Laura. I really appreciate that.
All right. Well, all right. Have a good evening, ladies. Thanks for all you're doing,
right.
Both of you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
You know, Gene, I think Laura makes an excellent point. And honestly, I have seen nothing but outpouring of support for you from the conservative community here in St. Louis. You know, I mean, I think people were really, they were scratching their heads. They were wondering why, you know, why would you make the decision to do this? But you've made it very clear. There is actually, I wrote an article for examiner.com, and that's up at, that will be up on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. But there's a great, you made a great statement after the press release came out for the show about exactly why you decided to stand up for your core principles here and conservative values, and this was a great platform for you to make that statement.
Well, thank you. I think you're absolutely right. This is not the time for circular fire, but I've always felt like, when people are going to have issues, as my good friend Anne-Marie Morel wrote in a post for Politics TV, she said, hate is going to hate. That's what they do. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when people have issues, it's their issues. It's things within themselves they're trying to resolve. And so I don't pay a lot of mind to that, but I do appreciate the support that has definitely come out of conservatives in Missouri. You guys have been amazing. And your post at Examiner.com was awesome, and I just thank you for that. And there has been a ton of that. And you know what? All of that is awesome, but none of it matters if we don't break through to the other side, to the people that aren't reading what you and I are writing and aren't listening to what you and I and others like us are saying. So my prayer is really that tomorrow night that the show can be used just to communicate with people that, you know, conservatives are really just normal people who are willing to put themselves out there and be laughed at or be ridiculed if that's what comes, but that we do have a perspective we believe in that much that it's worth it to us even to go into pretty foreign-feeling territory and and take those sorts of risks, that our opinions matter to us that much and that we feel that strongly, and just maybe somewhere out there, somebody will be affected by that and will find that actually the things they believe are more tilted to the right than they thought. And this is where we begin. You know, Sarah Palin did Sarah Palin's Alaska. She did, of course, her daughter did Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Warner, our own Kurt Warner from Missouri, of course, he did Dancing with the Stars. As I mentioned already, my pastor, Pastor Garlow, has been absolutely bold and courageous. I think he's doing a Combs' show this weekend.
Oh.
So the guy is just fearless, yeah. And I think that I hope that if there's a message I can send to conservatives, it's to go take their own risk, whatever that is. And it might not be that you have opportunities. I live right here in, you know, Hollywood Central, so I'm going to have those opportunities. But whatever your opportunities are, you know, founding your own radio show like you've done, you know, even if it's just making phone calls, for some people that's horrifying to make phone calls, but to take a risk to tell their you know, their person at their salon or at the grocery store, at their bank, you know, their opinions, to engage that dialogue in an unconfrontational and loving, above all, a loving way, then my mission is complete. If I've encouraged even one person to be more bold in their profession of what they believe and take more risks, at least one every day, I try to say, then I have done my job. Then I'm pleased, and it was worth whatever personal sacrifice there was on my part.
Well, Gina, you've made a very courageous move. I think that this should be a lesson for all of us. We just came through an election where we took a terrible beating, perhaps because we spent the previous 4 years preaching to the choir, not learning the lesson that we need to cast a wider net. You've certainly taken this very big first step in casting a wider net and spreading conservative values out to the independent people out there who need to reabsorb that conditioning that's been conditioned out of our society. I want to thank you so much. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on ABC, you can see Gina and her wonderful, beautiful family on Wife Swap and see what values we are trying to portray back into the culture. Gina, how else can we tell me about your radio show, and how else can we find you?
Thank you. Yeah, my radio show broadcasts on the East Coast right now, which is fascinating. I know it's very confusing, but people can get it in Missouri at docgtv.com. That's docgtv.com, where they can also find the book. We also have some great Patriot gear there, lots of gun stuff for all my friends in Missouri who still have the freedom to carry,
right?
Since I don't here. And so folks can go there. I'll be doing a lot of responding to the questions that will come from the show there on DocGTV. And just, Lisa, thank you again for everything you guys are doing, and thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, you're so welcome. We're so very proud of you. And put in a plug for Politichicks.tv, because Anne-Marie will fire me if I don't say something.
I already mentioned Politichicks TV. I already did it. And, of course, we know you're one of our fearless Politichicks. And I also have to give big kudos to Bill Hennessy, who also wrote an amazing post there in Missouri.
Yes, he did. Okay. Dr. Gina, we'll be looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on ABC, and we will also look for you at Doc Gina one more time.
DocGTV.com. Oh, and I should tell you, I'm going to be tipping Joe, oh, for crying out loud, the new guy, I suppose, Joe Holloman. I'm going to be sending him pictures and things through the night from our watch party tomorrow night, so folks might want to watch his stuff coming out of his column tomorrow.
All right, very good.
Friday. All right, awesome. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Gina. We'll talk to you soon.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a break. We will be right back with John Lilly.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Just want to wish Gina Loudon luck one more time. If you didn't get the time, tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on ABC, Wife Swap with Dr. Gina Loudon and her beautiful family, and the conservative values that we're trying to reinstill back into the culture. We have John Lilly on with us from the Locke & Smith Foundation. Very anxious to talk to you, Mr. Lilly, because I read through a bill today that you are going to explain to us here tonight. First of all, John Lilly of the Locke & Smith Foundation, I want to make that very clear. You work very closely with Tom March, who's a regular on our show, to talk about all of this legislation. And you guys do a fabulous job at Locke & Smith of scouring over more than 2,000 pieces of legislation a year to help the folks of Missouri become informed about what is going on in Jefferson City. Thank you for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. I kind of have latched on to this particular bill. It's House Bill 631 because I have several hats. I am also on the Willard School Board, which is Willard is a little subdivision or the suburb of Springfield, and the sponsor of the bill is Representative Kevin Elmer from the Nixa area that's also down here in Springfield. And I also write a local column for the Springfield News Leader. So I kind of saw this. Somebody else had a little column in the paper about a week ago. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Pulled up the bill and read through it. And as I was reading through it, I thought, this is, the ideas are nice, but it is, for some reason, the Republicans have decided we're going to put our stamp on the school districts.
I hope this isn't their stamp. John, this is a 15-page bill. That's your first flag right there.
Yeah, it's more than a stamp. It's a sledgehammer. They are redoing how teachers are evaluated and how you get from a temporary status to a permanent to get tenure. But they're doing it in a very heavy-handed way. They're doing it by mandating it from the state. And when I look at it, as a school board member, I said, wait a minute, that's my job to figure out how to do teacher evaluations. And in Willard, we are updating how we do teacher evaluations. They are wanting to include things, change it so that there are four different levels. Whenever we rate teachers on their evaluation, they have either highly effective, effective, minimally effective, or ineffective. And it just so happens the one that we are looking at, one that's very similar. But this is one where the state's going to mandate it, and part of that that evaluation has to be, in the original bill, they had at least 50% of it has to have some component of how well the students are doing during that year. And they had one last year. Last year, I think they specified the MAP test. And this year, they didn't specify the MAP test. But they said, you got to have
Some
of, because it's...
Common Core. Core is knocking at the door.
That's coming in. They want some... You have to have some kind of objective criteria to show the progress of, or non-progress of, students from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Which is, you know, I like that, but I don't want the state mandating it. So they are, one of the other things that had a, if it was a permanent teacher, which is a teacher that has tenure, if they have two consecutive years of being ineffective, getting a rating of ineffective, then you can go through the process of getting rid of them. Well, you know,
2 years, that's a lot of kids that fall through the cracks in 2 years.
Exactly. They're going to be teaching classes now. And this is one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about tenure. Can you get rid of a tenured teacher? Yes, you can. It takes time. You have to go through a very deliberate process, and it can take a year, sometimes longer. If the teacher wants to fight it legally, it can take even longer. Usually, if you have a good case, once you get to the point where they get an official letter from an attorney, they will go ahead and resign, because they would rather resign so they could go to another district and start over again, rather than go through the process. But getting to that process, it can be a full year, which means the kids, even now, have to go through you lose a year of kids being taught by a bad teacher. Well, in this bill, if you got to go through 2 years of having the ineffective label on you before you can start the process, well, that could be up to 3 years of kids being taught by a teacher that's ineffective.
Absolutely. Lots of kids. Well, this thing reads like the tax code. Because there's different criteria for different aspects of evaluation. There's different criteria for different aspects of teachers. There's different criteria for different aspects of principals. There's different criteria for firing. There's this different this is literally a 15-page bill, okay? So, and let's back up a little bit, okay? So the last couple of years, there was a big push for education reform. And what the legislature was trying to tell us was that they were going to get rid of tenure, and I think that's part of what this is attempting to at least give us a false sense of security, is that they're trying to get rid of tenure.
Right.
And it's not doing that. But I was reading through this. So let me give you an example of something that I found egregious here. Let's see. Okay, first of all, as I read this, think about, why is the Missouri legislature sticking the long arm of the law into your local school district that has a governing body that was elected by the people? Okay, just keep that in the back of your mind. Okay, so let's see, there's a part in here. It shall base decisions regarding significant differentiation in retention, promotion, dismissals, and other staffing decisions, including transfers, placements, preferences, in the event of reductions in force, primarily on the results of annual performance evaluations for teachers and principals. The board's reduction in force policy shall not use differentiation in compensation level, seniority, degrees, or credentials as based for determining pay or pay increases, or making the retention, promotion, dismissal, and staffing decisions described in this section, provided that nothing in the subsection shall prohibit the cost of living adjustment tied to the whole or in part of prior to comp- compensation levels. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on like this for 15 whole pages, and I can't even imagine that anybody could read through this and understand what the heck they're supposed to be doing at the end of the day when they decide that they need to dismiss a teacher or move a teacher somewhere else or put somebody on administrative leave or, my God, I just, my blood pressure just went through the roof. Can you tell?
Well, get ready for another jolt. I was in Jefferson City today at Americans for Prosperity. They had an event, and I talked with one of the legislators up there. This is going for a vote tomorrow on the House floor. So they have made some amendments, but it's just a matter of degree and not, you know, it's still the same substantial control over local school districts that is in the original bill.
Oh, my God.
So,
okay,
yeah,
your Speaker of the House is pushing this through the House of Representatives, is basically, because
yes.
He is a co-sponsor of this bill.
Right. Yeah, and this was last year. I don't think Speaker Tilley really pushed this that much. But for some reason, Speaker Jones this year is really pushing it. And there was an article in the local paper about a week and a half ago about this, and it had mentioned that the speaker was really pushing this thing this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I found out this is going to come up. It went out of committee by a vote of 13-11. So
wow.
it just barely made it out of committee.
Maybe a little arm twisting.
I think so, and I think the Speaker Jones is going to be doing a lot of arm twisting, and I can see that, you know, one of their points is there's a lot of districts out there that are, they're not well administered, and you know they're just not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go in and help them. And I think, that is the voters in that district. That's their responsibility. If the school board is not doing well enough, then the voters of that district have a responsibility to elect different school board members.
Exactly.
And not put the heavy hand of the state government on a one-size-fits-all for every 520-some school districts in the state.
Well, I think what you just said there is key, John, because it's one size fits all. We cannot get our legislators to stop thinking in those terms, one size fits all. We are having common core standards being shoved down our throats now. They are in place. I do not see and I know there's a bill. Kurt Barr has a bill, but it's kind of sitting there about to kill the common core here in Missouri. Right. So I don't see the same kind of passion coming from the speaker or anybody else in the House of Representatives to kill the Common Core the way I see the kind of passion going through on this bill, HB 631.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And the Common Core, if you go to the DESE website, they have a list of sponsors. It's nine pages. The Willard School District is on that. Well, I don't remember voting for anything, and then I realized, now I remember how they got it on there.
Mm-hmm.
This was from the Race to the Top back in
mm-hmm.
2009, and DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, sent a memorandum of understanding to every district in the state saying, we want your board to approve this so that we can show support so we can get these funds. And Willard, it was not unanimous, but we did agree to sign the thing. So that is what they're using to say that Willard supports the Common Core. They've got a ton of districts on there. They've got page after page of districts. And I'll bet it's the districts that okayed that memorandum of understanding
yep.
and raced to the top and sent it back.
Yep. Okay. So, folks, you need to burn up the phones tomorrow, basically. Do we have a plan of action, John, to just burn up the phones?
It is. Contact your legislators and tell them that you want them to vote against House Bill 631.
All right.
I think they are. They're having some amendments on it, but the amendments are just, you know, for, instead of 50%, it's 33% that, you know, the evaluation has to be based on the student achievement. It's minor stuff. Substance-wise, it's still the same.
Amendments or not, I mean, this is a 15-page bill. A lot of this bill has already been enacted into law. There are a lot of corrections and changes to it. But after reading through this bill, okay, school districts have governing bodies already that have been elected and chosen duly by the people. Okay, this bill reads like the tax code. What I, you know, I mean, and again, I mean, we've been so conditioned to just accept what comes at us. This, we don't need to be putting amendments on this bill. We need to be repealing this bill. This bill just puts a noose. You are tightening the noose around public education. It looks to me like most of it was written by the teachers' union, because basically once you get into the thick of it, near the end of it, I mean, it just basically protects teachers, really, that are not, you know, shouldn't be in the classroom, some of them.
I don't think it was the teachers' union. I think this is the Republicans. The teachers' unions don't like this because it is cutting out. You know, now they've got to be judged on some. That's the basics. Some of the basics of this I like, but I want to be the one that does it as a Willard School Board member and not get a mandate from the state.
Right. Go ahead, Cindy.
You know, John and Lisa, something that occurs to me is that what we're fighting here is our state legislature is doing what we've been fighting against, and they're going to rob us further of local control of our schools.
Exactly.
Yes, absolutely. If you look at, anybody can go to their school's website, and you can look at the board policies, and there are hundreds of them.
Right.
Up in the upper right-hand corner on anywhere from 60 to 70% of them, it will say critical. That means that that was some policy that was mandated by the state that the board had to pass. Roughly two-thirds of the policies of any district in the state are already state mandates. That's how little control the school boards actually have.
Yep. And it's going to get worse with the Common Core. Okay, John Lilly of Lock and Smith Foundation, I can't thank you enough for flagging this bill and bringing it to our attention. We really appreciate it, and we will encourage everybody to call their legislators by tomorrow, because they need to hear about this.
You bet.
All right, thank you, John Lilly. Come back and talk to us again. If something comes up, please let us know.
I sure will.
Thank you. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and we will be back with Cindy Chaffian from Mommy Lobby.
This is the Gun Owner's Minute. Many gun rights activists feel that it's an all-out assault on the Second Amendment by the Obama administration, with plans to reintroduce an assault weapons ban, banning magazines larger than 10 rounds, and limiting ammunition. What many gun and women rights activists are overlooking is discrimination and the all-out assault on women who own firearms for personal protection and that of protecting their loved ones. 2.5 million good Americans use guns to protect themselves, their families, and their livelihoods every year. Yes, Senator Feinstein, women do own firearms, and according to the 2011 Gallup poll, women reported household gun ownership is 43%, the highest ever recorded by Gallup. Gail Trotter, a fellow at the Conservative Independent Women's Forum, told the Senate Judiciary Committee that curbing access to guns would create an undue burden for women who would choose to defend themselves from violence. Research shows that states with concealed handgun laws have 25% fewer rapes than states that restrict or forbid women from carrying concealed handguns. Yes, there is a war on women, and it's coming from the likes of Feinstein and Obama, who have armed guards protecting them, but while trying to leave women defenseless. This has been the Old Patriot.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
This is The Culture Vigilante, and you are listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee, and we are happy to have back with us our friend from the Mommy Lobby, Cindy Chaffian. She is out there, again, also fighting the culture war. Cindy and company, the Mommy Lobby across the country, has waged a mini battle against Victoria's Secret for over-sexualizing our youth. And she's here to tell us about the plan of action that they have set up to take against that part of the sexualization of our culture. Cindy, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Okay. You know, I've always thought that this was an issue. You know, you can't walk through the mall, you know, without seeing Abercrombie and Fitch and nude, half-nude women. And, you know, I mean, it's everywhere. And I'm so glad that the Mommy Lobby has taken this issue up, because nobody has really spoken out in a strong way against the sexualization of our young people. So what did you find here, and what prompted this?
You know, it's really crazy because, like you said, Lisa, you can't walk through the mall without having to really kind of avoid your children from seeing, you know, when you walk past a Victoria's Secret store, you kind of make them go, oh, look what's on the other side. Or when you walk past an Abercrombie store, you know, you try to keep them from looking inside. You know, there's just, it's the images and the visuals are everywhere. And, you know, it's difficult because these companies, you know, as a conservative who believes in free market principles, you know, I respect their rights to market their products. However, there is some type of accountability that we need to expect from these companies. And I think with this the recent campaign called the Bright Young Things line from Victoria's Secret's pink, their pink line, which is geared towards 15 to 20 year olds, despite their claim that it's only geared towards college students. We all know the difference.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, I'm thinking college students, too. Oh. I mean, do we want to be throwing college students into that mix, too?
I agree. I mean, I really, when I send my daughter to college, I'm a realist. I understand that kids, you know, they're curious and things happen. But I'd rather think that she, you know, that she's out there doing her studies instead of partying. I'm not an idiot. I know that, you know, I know things happen. But, you know, let's not encourage these things.
Yeah, we don't have to accept it.
Exactly. Well, that's true, and we don't. And so, but, you know, college students, they are adults. They can make their own decisions, and, you know, they're trying to find a way. But my problem is when they admit that they're marketing towards 15-year-olds, that's their admitted age, even though their press release recently says, no, we're you know, looking at college-age students. But in the past, Pink has admitted that their target demographic are girls from ages 15 to 22. But if you look at so much of their latest fashion line, like their fashion show that they did this past year, if you look at it, it looks like a 5-year-old's birthday party. Not to mention the fact that they had Justin Bieber there. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't know many college student girls who are huge fans of Justin Bieber. However, I do know a lot of 11 to 15-year-olds that love him. So, you know, this in conjunction with the fact that they are, you know, the colors are bright and fun. I don't really have a product with some of the product, or have an issue with some of the products, but I think they pushed the envelope with some of the language that they used on some of the panties.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
First of all, a demographic of 15 to 22. Okay, that's huge. That span is huge in the minds of a teenager. You know, you can have a demographic of a 15 to an 18-year-old or a 15 to a 17-year-old and be fairly close. A 15-year-old and a 22-year-old are worlds apart.
I agree 100%. And so the outcry has come from really – we didn't intend to kind of take this mantle on. We did write a blog post on it, and from my perspective, I was like, there is no way that my daughters are ever going to wear anything like that. But that's just something that I've had instilled even before this line came out. I have two young daughters, ages 11 and 13, and they just know better. We don't shop at Victoria's Secret for them. It's just not an option. But I had such a huge hue and cry from our membership. Just they were really upset, and are we going to do anything? So we kind of ratcheted up, and as our members were, you know, we encouraged them, which is what we do, is we encourage moms to raise their voice and to take issue and to make their concerns known, whether it's in, you know, the political world or whether it's in the social aspects, wherever it is, raise your mom voice is what we tell them. And so what has happened is we had countless women bombarding the Victoria's Secret wall, and, you know, it eventually gets picked up by the media.
Mm-hmm.
We had a we do have a petition online, and that, you know, where women could go to voice their concerns and really just kind of come together.
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually planning a nationwide silent protest on April. Let me see. I think it's on April 6th.
Mm-hmm.
Not this Saturday, but next Saturday. And we're asking people. We're starting to go national on it, but we're asking people to get their family and friends together if they do have a problem with Victoria's Secret and the particular line sexualizing their daughters, which obviously they do, to go in front of their Victoria's Secret silently and respectfully and hold up signs or whatever it is that they have concerns with. So, you know, we're really just kind of taking the call to action. We're not asking Victoria's Secret to change anything because, like I said, we are free market capitalists. We do believe in that. But we do think it's important to kind of send a message that you maybe have stepped over the line on this one.
Yeah, a peaceful protest outside of the Victoria's Secret in your neighborhood.
Yes. You know, we're asking people to find, you know, just go to their local Victoria's Secret, get however many people they want together, and just for an hour, you can find all the information on our website, www.themommylobby.org, or on our Facebook page. That's actually where most of the information is fed into, is our Facebook page. There'll be more information there. And, you know, we're just asking to raise the awareness, because what we do is we bring moms together so that other moms know they're not alone. That's what we do. There are so many women out there that kind of let their daughters do certain things that maybe they're not comfortable with because they feel so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them do it because they see, well, you know, Susie wants to do it, so of course, well, I don't want Jamie to feel left out, so we'll let her do it on this one time. Well, an inch becomes a mile, becomes 10 miles, and
right.
Next thing you know, you're compromising your principles because you don't want your daughter to be that one kid.
But yeah, that's how you chip away at core conservative values. We had Gina Loudon on the show earlier, and she, you know, made a huge step out to kind of put core conservative values out there in the media and out in the marketplace. And this is the next best thing to that. This is perfect for you, for moms to network together to stand strong on conservative principles.
And, you know, what we try to do is we try to kind of link arms with other conservative moms and say, you know, you're not the only one in the room who feels this way. Because what the left has been so successful at doing is marginalizing and alienating those conservative voices. So what we try to do is bring those women together in their communities and on the national level and say, you know what, there are more of us than there are of you, and we will not remain quiet anymore. We will stand up, and conservative principles are worth fighting for. And modesty, especially when it comes to the sexualization of our kids, it's crazy. Everywhere you turn, and I know you know that, everywhere you turn, it's constant. You can't turn on the radio, you can't turn on the television, you can't go shopping without it being bombarded and shoved down our throats. And I think they really have stepped over the line, and this is kind of breaking, the dam is cracking. And moms and dads, you would not believe how much backlash I've gotten from dads who are ticked off. And, you know, they've had it. They have had it. And, you know, one of the things that I told somebody the other day was Victoria's Secret has our daughter's entire adult life to let them be a customer.
Right.
Let them be little. Let them be young. Let them be innocent. They only have this one shot at that time in their life. Let them enjoy it. And is that too hard? I don't think it's too hard.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and I can speak from experience, too. I'm a homeschooling mom. I homeschooled my children most of the way, you know, through their schooling years. And I can tell you that I noticed that there was a difference in my children's curiosity and the age level at which things happened for them naturally when they weren't being exposed to it every day at an institutional school. And there's a huge difference, folks. We've pushed the bar way, way low in our culture, because it's like you said, I think that there's a lot of peer pressure even among parents to let things slip by because they don't want their kids to be left out of the equation. They don't want their kids to be attacked by their own peer pressure, and it's a little piece at a time, just like you said, it just gets chipped away at. And I have to agree. I mean, I saw your post on the Mommy Lobby website, and they have words written across underwear that have suggestive meanings for little girls.
Exactly. I mean, my 13-year-old does not need to wear a pair of panties saying "feeling lucky" or "call me." No.
Yeah.
They're totally inappropriate.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just. And my husband was like, "No, if anything, they need to have a pair of underwear that says my daddy owns a shotgun." You know. touch it and die. And, that's kind of the, if my daughter's going to have something written on their panties, that's what it's going to say, because, consider yourself warned. You will be severely injured. Turn back now.
danger.
Exactly. And people say, well, what about the parents? Isn't it ultimately up to the parents? Of course it is. And
the parents are doing something about it, because on April 6th,
exactly,
they're going to be out in front of Victoria's
Secret.
That's
right. Absolutely. So, it is up to the parents, and the parents are saying, okay, Victoria's Secret, consider this fair warning, because if you continue to do this, we are not going to shop at your store anymore. Not only am I not going to shop there for my daughter, you're going to lose me as a customer, because you disrespect me as a parent, and you disrespect my daughter, who has the opportunity to be innocent once in her life, and you're taking that away from her. So make your choice. It's up to you.
Very good. Yep.
Go ahead.
Yep. Okay, Cindy Cheffian, themommylobby.org.
Yes.
Is where we
and
can
on
go.
Facebook, too.
And on Facebook, but the petition is on themommylobby.org, and you can get information about the silent protest on April 6th.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it. And keep us posted on the progress of this situation. We'd like to know how things go.
Absolutely. We'll do. Thanks again.
Okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Yankee Doodle Legislation Alerts with Tom.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there are certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible, because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Cindy McGee is with us tonight of Show Me Patriots. And before we get to Tom Martz, I want to make a little public address announcement. We're going to have Lauren Spivak, the Free Market Warrior, is going to be in St. Charles County at the Family Vision Library on April 29th and 30th. And he's going to be giving us a two-night seminar. Oh, hello. Hello, Grassroots Minute. He's going to be giving us a two-night seminar on the free market principles and capitalism and how that works in our country. And it's a great seminar for anybody, adults, and we're going to actually encourage you to bring your teenagers along with you, because, there's a lot of stuff going on in the country. They're not getting, especially if your kids have kids in institutional schools, they're not getting a lot of that civics lessons that they should be getting about the government and capitalism and free market principles and how the laws and such work in that area. So bring your kids April 29th and 30th. That information will be up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org very soon, and it's at the Family Vision Library. You can also go to the Family Vision Library and get information there. Okay. Tom Martz, Yankee Doodle Legislation Alerts. We were kind of last minute pulling stuff together today. We got a few things that we want to look at. Hi, Tom.
Good evening. After listening to your last guest, I am very thankful that I only have two sons, because I would have been the worst ever father ever for a girl.
My dad actually used to sit in the living room. I mean, we had a very strict curfew. It was an in-the-door-by-midnight curfew, and not on the driveway, not on the porch. It was an in-the-door-midnight curfew. And if he didn't like the guy we were dating, he would stay up and clean his guns at midnight. So, I mean, it was like, you know, that's when we knew things were serious back then. So, yeah.
Midnight would have been way too long for me. It would have been about 9 p.m., and
yep.
They better be in the driveway by 8:30.
Yep, I know it. It's so scary. And I'll tell you, with the way things are today, I have good kids. I'm very grateful, I'll tell you. It's a scary place out there. But you know what? It's great. Things like Gina Loudon and Cindy Cheffian of the Mommy Lobby, you know, bringing that kind of stuff back. You know, we've just totally erased that kind of stuff from our culture. You know, we have been deprogrammed and politically corrected. All of that stuff has been just taken out of the culture, and all of those conservative values that kept us on the straight and narrow, they've just been chipped away at a little bit by little bit, and we don't even know they're gone. It's terrible.
And I didn't really notice it at first. I mean, it kind of didn't dawn on me at the very beginning, but when you see a little 8, 9, 10-year-old girl walking around the mall and on the back of her derriere is the word nice, like, what the heck was this clothing manufacturer thinking?
You know, and I don't even think you should be seeing that on the back of an adult's derriere in public.
I would never put it on the back of mine.
Well, okay. And I think that's probably a good thing. So it's probably time for us to move on to Yankee Doodle legislation after that comment.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we have a couple of things going on here. You know, I didn't look up the SJR resolution, but I did look. I have all three of these that we talked about on Facebook. But these Senate bills, they are moving fast. They've been passed through the Senate, and they're already in the House, and they're interesting. Let's start with 199.
199, and I posted this on the open page, too, of the Lock and Smith Legislative Review Group, that anyone can request that they be welcomed into, and we will
on Facebook.
Make sure that on Facebook. And what we do there is, as my schedule allows and as some of the committee members' schedule allows, we will post random pieces of legislation. Whether or not it gets through really is no basis. But this is one that if somebody would have told me a couple years ago that this piece of legislation would make it through the Senate and make it to the House, I would have laughed uncontrollably. But now that I look at it and realize that this made it past the Senate, A majority of the Senate thought this 199 was a good enough piece of legislation that is now sitting in the House.
Right. Okay.
And basically, this piece of legislation is encouraging all long-term care facilities licensed in the state of Missouri to institute a policy trying to get the family involved with the care of their elderly parent, grandparent, or whatever it may be. And I talk to people. I mean, I've got customers throughout the state of Missouri.
I see Obamacare all over this.
Well, we talk about things that are political, and I have yet to have anyone, and I've got a couple that own residential care facilities like this. They try big time to get the families involved.
Mm-hmm.
And most generally, these residential care facilities are almost like a school. We're just going to dump them off. We're going to forget they're there because we're paying the bill. Let those people handle them.
Well, basically, the way I read it, you know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a piece of legislation. It's a paragraph. There's not much to it. And basically what it says is that the health care facility has to try to encourage familial involvement. So the so they're legislating the healthcare facility to encourage family involvement in the healthcare of, in the long-term care of their loved ones, but there's no penalty. There's no criteria. I mean, and not that I want it. I mean, I think this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Why is that? Why is the legislature? Why are they even writing this piece of legislation? Oh, Senator Chappelle Nadal. Now I know. So
well, these things are already being done. I mean, these
well, why is the legislature sticking their nose in it? You know, this is not. This is facility policy stuff. This has nothing to do with the legislature. You know, they're all they're doing is they're waving their arms back in Jefferson City saying, you need to do this, you need to do this. Why are they telling these people what to do? Why are they telling these people what to do?
I would be curious to who it is who has approached
they're not
the
solving
senator
a problem.
To ask her to write this.
But there's nothing, there's no provisions in this bill to solve any specific problem. All they're doing is saying that it is a law that you have to ask the family to be involved. How are you solving a problem?
You're not solving a problem, and these establishments already do this on their own without this piece of legislation.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny to sit there and look at it and go, really, these are the pressing matters for the state of Missouri?
Right. This is, and this another, isn't Senator Chappelle Nadal the one that introduced that gun bill not too long ago, trying to make it a mandatory that your school finds out if you have a reports if you have a gun at home?
I believe she is also the same one who introduced.
Okay.
But at least that one hasn't gone anywhere. This one is in the House.
Yeah, this one's moving, and that's another great. You're absolutely right. The Senate is moving this bill to the House. That's just great. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. Okay. Senate Bill 208.
Senate Bill. Why don't I have that one up on my computer?
Senate Bill 208. I'll just read it real quick while you get it up on your computer. If a youth under the this is very bad, and it's also moving. If a youth under the age of changing from 18 to 21 is released from the custody of the Children's Division, after such release, it appears that it would be in such the youth's best interest to have his or her custody returned to the Children's Division, the juvenile officer, the Children's Division, or the child. Or the youth, I'm sorry, may petition the court to return custody of such youth to the division until the child is 21 years of age. You now are going to have the government raising the age of legalization to 21 years of age, where the government, the state, has a long arm over the future of a child.
And one of the things,
is this going to affect schools? Oh my God! Oh my God! If they do that with this, where is it going to go next?
Now, keep in mind that what this bill actually does is they're removing the word "child," and every place that it says "child," they're putting in the word "youth."
Youth. Right.
And everywhere that there is the word 18, they're removing 18 and they're putting 21. And they're removing the word family services and putting in children's division. I mean, there's not – most of this bill is already law, which should – I mean
– Yeah, but they're expanding it.
They are expanding it up to the age of 21. And there is – when I lived out in California, there was a gentleman who started a program. Once you become – once if you're in a foster care system and you become 18, you're basically thrown out on the street.
But you know what this is about? You get federal funding from the government. The state gets federal funding from the government for putting kids into the system. So they are extending by 3 years their ability to collect federal funding is basically what this is about.
Correct. And there's a gentleman out in California who started what was considered a home for foster kids who at the age of 18 were being booted out.
Mm-hmm.
they were allowed to stay in this home until they were 21. And what this gentleman did is he basically brought them in and put them on a quote-unquote military regiment where, you know, they had chores to do around the house. He got them to the point where they went out and filled out applications. They got jobs. He taught them how to manage their money. They had to pay a certain amount to live in the house. They had to do their own laundry. And this was a wildly successful program out in the Bay Area, California, until the state decided that it was too successful.
Huh.
And it was absolutely 100% at the start. It was all privately funded.
Oh, my gosh.
And the state got wind of it. This was out in Danville, California, which is about 35 miles northeast of San Francisco. And it was in an area where there were multi-million-dollar homes.
Oh. You know,
the residents got wind that this guy had what was considered a halfway house, when in reality, you know, these kids were doing things. They had curfews.
Uh-huh.
You know, they had a dietary regimen that they had to eat three meals a day. They had to do their dishes. They had to do their laundry. They had to mow the lawn. They had to sweep the sidewalk. They had to fill out applications. They had to get a job. And he got them to the point where they were successful enough that they could leave that home and survive on their own.
Wow.
Because the foster care does nothing. And generally the parents who are foster parents do nothing, and that's a generalized statement, but a large percentage of them simply use that money or simply use that means to say, look what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
and I get money from the state to have this kid in my home. But once that kid turns 18, very few of those parents try to keep that kid with them until they are set to the point where they could move out of the house and fend for themselves.
Right. Very few kids can move out of the house at 18, you know. It's hard to get up. You can't get it. I mean, if you can't get a good job with a high school diploma and move out of the house.
And I think what also is happening here, and I don't know the bill number, but there's another bill that is working its way through the House. And last year it absolutely passed the House. That's going to require students in foster care to be required to go and visit a quote unquote higher institute of learning.
Hmm.
So basically, yeah, they've got them in this system, and in order to go to college, what's the first thing you need? You need money.
Hmm.
Well, who do you get the money from? You get it from government.
Mm-hmm.
So let's keep them tied into the system for as long as possible and get them to the point where they don't know any other way but government.
You know, Tom and Lisa, another thing that comes to my mind in listening to this discussion is that the state is being empowered to control, basically, these kids at 18 are no longer youth. They're young adults. They are entering adulthood. By 21, they're certainly young adults. An 18-year-old can get married without parental consent. They can vote. They can enlist in the military. You know, on and on it goes. Is the state willing to empower parents the way they're empowering the state to have control and continue to have influence and the law behind them on their 18 to 21-year-olds?
I doubt it.
Where's the parental control in this?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah,
Where's
nothing but expand the control of the state.
Right. Where's the concern about concerned parents,
mm-mm,
who are trying to do what's right by their children? Because currently in Missouri, a 17-year-old can leave home, and the parents are powerless to do anything about it.
Yeah, because is emancipation age 17, Cindy?
Well, actually, emancipation can be done at 16 if the parents petition and have it done. But no, a 17-year-old can go, and they will not go and retrieve that 17-year-old if they run away from home, because we went through this past fall with one of our grandchildren. And our son was powerless to do anything to get his daughter back to him because she was 17. And even though the state laws specify one thing, because of the just ambiguity of the laws in Missouri governing this are ridiculous. But, you know, when you look at what they're doing with this, to empower the state to have control over now starting at 18 all the way to 21, you're not fixing anything that's wrong with the system by doing that. All you're doing is giving the state power and control over these kids.
Wasn't there
and
a bill in the House?
Are you doing anything?
Wasn't there a bill in the House that was kind of trying to alleviate that problem?
There was a bill in the House that was trying to alleviate that, and I have not been able to, I have not had the opportunity to see, I haven't seen what has happened with that bill. I believe that Paul Kirtman was carrying that bill forward to try and fix the problems with our state law concerning minor children and this loophole that allows these children at 17 to leave home even though they're not legally adults. Parents in this state are responsible, financially responsible for their kids until they're 21.
Yeah, and with Obamacare, they're financially responsible for them until they're 26.
And so I guess in view of this, Tom, this bill, you know, it's really, it begs, there are a lot of questions raised by this. Why are we empowering a state authority to have that type of control, and we don't even address parental authority and maybe support for parents to try to do the right thing by their children, the parents that are out there working, not, you know, don't have children in the foster care system that are doing the right thing, but maybe have children or going through a period of rebellion. I mean, it's so convoluted.
They're so quick to let the state jump in and take your kids. I mean, they're just looking for an excuse. That's ridiculous.
Well, one of the things that I noticed, probably, I guess it was back when Iraq, Afghanistan was in its heyday, the media was well versed in this, and I used to always pay attention to it because at first I didn't think I was hearing what I was absolutely hearing. But if a person is in the military and they're between the ages of 18 to 21, they were considered a young man and young woman. But you could take that same individual, put them in college, and they always considered them children. And it took me a while, and it dawned on me finally that every time they talked about a member of the military, an 18-year-old, they were an adult. But yet if they were in college, they were considered a child. The same individual, same age, everything. It's just one's overseas serving his country, the other one's in a government institution getting educated.
Okay.
Indoctrinated.
No standardization there. That's not going to work for a government subsidy. Oh, my head's exploding. Okay. Senate Joint Resolution number 16.
16 or 14? Because I kind of like 14.
I can pull it out. We can talk about 14.
Okay, 14. Oh, 16 is the one that deals with the tax increase.
Yeah, let's kind of mention that we're going to have a tax increase for
now,
the state.
We had a Americans for Prosperity event down here less than a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some state representatives in this meeting. And one of the state representatives absolutely asked Patrick Werner and all the people in attendance if they would be willing to support a 1 cent increase in their tax for infrastructure improvements.
Oh, I knew it. Here it comes. Go ahead. What did they say?
Well, there was people that were none too happy. Of course, there was one gentleman who was all for it because he thought it was going to somehow increase the bike paths and the walking paths.
Oh.
And then there was a gentleman who said, well, if you rebate me back all the money that I pay in fuel taxes, you know, just get rid of that 17 cents fuel tax that I pay, let's talk. But if you're going to keep both of them, then no. And what's occurring is it's one of these issues where vehicles are getting more and more and more fuel efficient, which also means they're getting lighter and lighter and lighter, which means they don't have as much of an impact on the highway system as they did back in the 50s when they were a lot heavier.
Right.
Tractor and trailer weights are still the same. It's 80,000 pounds on a five-axle vehicle. Fuel taxes for a semi are done a lot differently because you got the international fuel tax agreement between the states. So every time you see a semi driving up and down the road, they are actually charged a percentage of their fuel taxes for every mile that they drive up and down the state of Missouri. So, and every state. So if people try to proclaim that it's the tractor and trailer traffic who aren't paying their fair share, they're absolutely incorrect. These trucking companies pay more than their fair share.
Yeah, I mean, and it comes back to you anyway, you know, in
the
prices.
It's the car. You know, these things that are getting 30, 40, 50 miles to the gallon, that, and they're not doing a lot of damage to the roads. So why is it that our roads constantly need repaired? I believe, in my opinion, is we don't build roads to last.
Oh, for sure.
We build them so they have a life cycle of about 10 years so government can come back and say, we need to fix this. And then we'll go out and we'll grind it off, and then we'll repave it and we'll say, we're good for another 10 years.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
But I don't know how you feel about it. You know, I believe that if you want to believe that government should provide for the infrastructure of
the state
of Missouri, and that would be I-70, I-44, all the interstate system, that's what the federal fuel tax is supposed to provide for. And then you've got your state fuel tax, which should be rebated back to do the, you know, the U.S. highways and the Missouri routes and things of that nature. What we don't need is a mile marker every 2/10
mm-hmm.
on the highway, proclaiming that you're now 2/10 further than what you were a couple seconds ago. And then we have all those signs to say MoDOT cares.
Right.
That money, and I don't, I've heard that money actually came from the federal government, which also means that
that's my money. Yeah.
That
but
required those signs to be put there.
Well, here's the deal. Okay, so yes, government is supposed to provide the infrastructure. I want government to do that. However, you know, I'm not seeing that contracts are being negotiated efficiently. You know, I think there are probably a lot of cost-plus contracts going on. There's no contracts being negotiated that have bonuses for completing road construction projects early, bonuses for, you know, coming in under budget, any of that kind of stuff. I'm not seeing any of that stuff going on. So, while I don't know this to be the case because I don't have the facts on how they build the roads, I would be very surprised if you were incorrect that they're not building roads to take on that substantial wear and tear. I don't think that you're building quality roads.
Yeah, it's almost like they have a built-in obsolete factor.
Right.
When they do this type of
they're
stuff.
They're cutting costs. You know, they're allowing the construction companies to cut costs as much as they can. And, you know, we are ultimately paying the price for that. That's my theory because I don't have the fact on that. So you want to talk about 14 a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about 14.
Okay.
14 I actually like, and I'll explain why.
Okay, you're going to have to explain it to me because I think it's Yankee Doodle.
Well, I believe it is in a manner, but I like the aspect that they are eliminating the section out of the constitutional amendment for the state of Missouri that states, but this shall not justify the wearing of concealed weapons.
And I agree with that part.
This removal gets us back to the point where you have the right to keep and bear arms. It didn't say you had to wear it on the outside of your jacket. It didn't say you had to wear it on the inside of the jacket. You just had the right to do it.
Didn't we have the right to do it anyway before this was ever put into law in the first place? I mean, that part is existing law that they're eliminating, and they're adding a new section that says this right, the rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. The state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. Weren't they anyway?
Yeah, but you got to remember, this is we're actually changing the Constitution for this. It's not, quote-unquote,
right,
a piece of legislation that's going to be a state statute.
We're changing
the Missouri Constitution to specifically state what it is that government should be doing anyway, and
that's fine.
Irritating.
And I think that's fine. But the reality is, I mean, the state constitution does not supersede the Second Amendment of the federal constitution. We have the right to bear arms already, as guaranteed by the federal constitution.
But there at one point in time, don't forget that everyone was under the assumption that the Bill of Rights was simply a federal government deal, not and that it didn't follow through to the states. And the reason
and
they thought that is because the First Amendment of the federal constitution specifically states that Congress shall pass no law. That meant the duly assembled body in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, Tom, and there's still dissension among even constitutional conservatives about that issue. And so perhaps it is better for Missouri to codify into our own constitution that support for the Second Amendment rights of its citizens.
You know, now, I've had people tell me that I respect, not saying I'm going to agree with them, but I have heard them tell me that because the First Amendment says Congress shall pass no law, that also follows through to the Second, the Third, the Fourth, the Fifth, the Sixth, the Seventh, the Eighth, the Ninth, and the Tenth. I adamantly disagree because I believe that if Congress shall pass no law was meant for the Second, they would have said Congress shall pass no law. That's only for the First Amendment. That isn't for the rest of the nine. But you know, that's subject to whoever's opinion you're listening to.
Okay. Well, it kind of walks a line for me. I mean, I kind of think, you know, we've got the Second Amendment. I think that gives us the ultimate right to keep and bear arms. I'm really glad that somebody's rewording this lovely joint resolution to kind of reaffirm that here in Missouri, but I kind of think it's kind of redundant.
I do too, but the only part of this I really like is they're eliminating the aspect of the concealed weapons permit.
Right.
All right. Very good. Tom Martz of the Lock and Smith Foundation. We will continue to be on the hunt for Yankee Doodle legislation in the future. There's certainly enough to go around. I think though the flagging of these two bills, the SB bills 208 and 199. Are critical. I think we need to kind of call our legislators on those, especially the 208 with, yeah, the 208 extending the age of children to 21. That's just absurd. You know,
in a few more years, watch, it'll be the age 26.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is an Obamacare step as far as I can see. And really, this is nothing more than Senators Jolie Justice and McKenna extending the ability for the state of Missouri to collect federal dollars to keep the kids in the system longer for 3 years. That's all this is. That's obscene.
Now, I don't know if this is factual, but one of the members of the legislative committee has actually posted on the open the Lock and Smith legislative review that Senate Bill 199. Which is the one that we're just now talking about, passed 34 in favor of, and there's only 34 senators.
Oh, God, it was unanimous?
It was unanimous.
Really?
Terrible, isn't it?
That's a little scary. Republicans, thank you so much.
And constitutional conservatives, they'll tell you that.
Oh, this just gets better and better every day. Crawling into the cave, pulling the rock in behind me. Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Bet. Have a good evening.
We'll talk to you next time. Thanks. Tom Smith, lockandsmith.org. com. Which one is it?
Lockandsmith.com.
Lockandsmith.com. And visit him on Facebook. Thanks, Tom.
You bet. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Okay. Something I want to address with you folks before we wrap things up tonight. I was at a book sale this weekend, and we kind of have to hurry because we're running out of time. At a book sale, ran into a homeschooling mom there. She is the Missouri director for Citizen Legislator Inc. There's a movement across the country, and they are trying to get directors and field people in every state to join Citizen Legislator Inc. to push this initiative. What they're trying to do is to get a constitutional amendment put through to initiate term limits for federal politicians. They don't want to do it through the con method. They're very adamant about that. They want to get it put through Congress. And there's a movement, and it's growing across the country. And I have a short interview here that I want to play with Molly Nasham. She's the Missouri field director here, Missouri state director. She's looking for folks to volunteer to help put this initiative together here in Missouri. And let's listen to that interview right now.
You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and we have on the line with us Molly Nasham. Molly is a homeschool mom from the St. Louis area, and she is also a patriot and activist. And she's become very involved in an organization called Citizen Legislator. And this is a wonderful organization that is working to bring accountability to the citizens of the United States through the legislature. And we're going to have Molly explain to us exactly what she is doing with this organization and what they're trying to accomplish. Thanks for being with us, Molly.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being with us today. Molly, it was good to see you at the homeschool book sale over the weekend, and you were working hard to get some information out about this group, Citizen Legislator. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, we're a nonprofit organization, and our single purpose is to get term limits on our Congress. We want to our government to be more representative of the people so that there shouldn't be this separate political class and where they, once they're elected, they don't have to abide by the rules that they have set up. So our single purpose is to set up a congressional or a constitutional term limit for the representatives would be three terms, and for the Senate, it would be two terms.
That is a great idea, especially when there's so many legislators in Missouri and across the country trying to extend term limits. Now, presently, federal legislators do not have term limits. We all know that. They can be a lifetime career politicians. So tell me, Molly, how did you get involved in Citizen Legislator?
Actually, it was through Facebook. Someone had sent me a message. His name is actually Alan Levy, and he was he's a lawyer in Texas, and he told me about it, and I thought that was a great idea, and we need to get the people in Missouri to be behind it too.
And you're their state director, so the purpose of Citizen Legislator is they want to bring a constitutional amendment to bring term limits to federal politicians. Is that it?
Right. That's our sole issue. We're trying to stay focused on one thing and not to get distracted by these. There are so many issues out there.
Right, because career politicians, I mean, I don't know that anybody would really believe that having a career politician in office has really been beneficial to the country. We are in a heap of mess. And there is such a huge network now that is very tightly knit in Washington, D.C., and it kind of gets that way on a state level as well, but especially in Washington, D.C. So term limits, I for one, am for term limits. We all know that the Constitution gives the people the power to vote people out when they're not happy with their legislators, but I think in today's political climate, I think that you really need term limits to break up that power structure because it's just so hard to go against an incumbent in an election.
Right.
Do you have any comments on that about Citizen Legislator and their views on that issue? And how?
Right. Part of the problem is that our system, when people get into Congress, they can change the laws and not have to abide by them. So they have a network and they get this So we could vote them out, but then the political parties don't give us candidates who can effectively challenge the status quo. So
it's very hard to run against an incumbent that's been there for decades. It's just almost impossible.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, this is not a total answer, but it's a start in the right direction. We still have to be educated and understand who the candidates are and where they stand, and so we still have to be responsible citizens.
Okay. So on a brochure that you handed me over the weekend, some of the questions that they're answering here through citizen legislators, those who would govern should be part of governed, because we all know that, as you just said a minute ago, many of the elected in Washington, D.C. don't follow by the same or play by the same rules or have to play by the same rules that the rest of us have to play by as citizens back here in the state. And there should not be a permanent political class, which there has been. And we all know the network there in Washington, D.C. is very tight, and it's very hard to fight. You can't fight that big bureaucracy there. And campaign finance reform. So I'm hoping that citizen legislator has a huge focus on campaign finance reform. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know too much about it, but it will change. It will. The idea is to open up the elections so more people can be elected, and that there won't be certain groups of people that have a control, and so that our government represents the real people.
Right.
Understand that.
Okay, so how can people become engaged and informed about citizen legislator, Molly?
We have a website. It's citleg.org on the internet, and there's three steps that you can take. The first step is to sign the petition for a constitutional amendment. You can, on the website, you can go through and you can read the amendment. There's four articles, and you can see the other people who have signed the petition. And we have citizen legislator, I don't remember how many states, but it's at least 23 states. And we need people to get involved and to take the three steps. And they can always send me an email if you want to do more. I want to encourage people to take those three steps, and so Missouri can be in the lead. We're having a campaign, so if you want to be on the ground floor and on helping us get term limits, I really want to talk to you.
Okay, very good. And can we give your email address out on the air?
Sure, okay.
Okay, it's molly.nesham, N-E-S-H-A-M, @gmail.com.
Right, that's me.
Okay. Or you can email info@citleg.org, that's C-I-T-L-E-G.org, for the National Office for Citizen Legislator, Inc. And then go to citleg.org, C-I-T-L-E-G.org, and sign that petition and get that going. Do you know, Molly, is this a call for an amendment through Congress, or is this a constitutional convention amendment?
We're going to go through Congress. We do not want to have a constitutional convention, because that would open up too many problems. Most of the amendments, in fact, all of them except the first 10, I think, were done through Congress. So we do not need to have a constitutional convention.
Excellent. I agree. A constitutional convention would be a disaster. We're already in enough trouble as it is by losing our constitution through executive orders. We don't need a con. Okay, so one more time, you can contact Molly at molly.nesham@gmail.com, or you can go to
sitleg.org, and you can email info@sitleg.org for more information. Thanks, Molly, for being with us today. We hope to have you back on with more success for recruitment in Missouri.
All right.
Okay, we are going to have Alan Levy on with us next week. He is one of the founders of Citizen Legislators, Inc. He's going to give us a little bit more history and a little bit more information about the nationwide movement to put this initiative together to bring a constitutional amendment to limit term limits for the national federal legislators. I talked to him for a little while this afternoon. Very interesting young, very interesting man. He's got a lot of history. I think that he comes from a family full of attorneys, very conservative-minded attorneys, which is kind of hard to come by sometimes. And they're very anti-con-con, and they want to do this through the Congress. And they have been gaining some steam and putting this movement together. So we'll have him on next week to give us some more details about that situation. And again, if you want to get in touch with Molly Neesham, go to molly.neesham@gmail.com. And you can also go to the website, www.sitleg.org. And they have a great website. I was surfing it today. Okay. I want to thank Cindy McGee for sitting in with me this week again. Always great to have you with me, Cindy. I appreciate you being in here.
Hey, no problem. I really appreciate you having me on, and it was a great show tonight, Lisa.
Great. Thank
and
you.
And lots of things covered.
Yep. We want to wish Gina Loudon the best of luck, folks. Tune into Wife Swap and send them an email. Get on the ABC website and send them an email and let them know what you think of their situation there. Let them know what you think of their treatment of Gina Loudon on their television show. There is a large majority of people with conservative values out there, and it's, you know, good luck to Gina Loudon and God bless her for taking the leap and casting a wider net. Few of us in the conservative movement have been able to do that or see the value in that in the last 4 years, and we took a beating in November because of it. So Gina Loudon has certainly stepped up and done that. So absolutely great for her.
It is, and we need more people willing to step up and do that and not. Don't stand there criticizing. Just get in there and do your part.
Absolutely. And she certainly has. And Cindy and I were talking during the interview, too. I mean, there are people like Sarah Palin and help me, Cindy. Michelle Bachmann, you know, who are just taking a beating because they're speaking out for conservative values. And, you know, you may agree with them. You may not agree with them on some of the issues. But there are women out there. And you notice how it's women. Mostly the ones who are the brave ones who are stepping out, who are coming out and speaking for conservative values, and they need your support, folks. So we want to support Gina in her efforts on Wife Swap and go to her website and listen to her radio show and get her book, Ladies and Gentlemen, too, to help those conservative values with our young folks. Thanks to John Lilly for flagging the legislation there with the school board situation. That is SB... Our HB 631, call your legislators because that's going up for a vote tomorrow. Tim Jones has been pushing this for a couple of years. You need to talk to your legislators about that right away. Don't wait. And Cindy Cheffian from Mommy Lobby for her great work in speaking out. And Tom Martz, always Locke & Smith Foundation. And thanks to Molly Neesham for coming on the air and introducing us to Citizen Legislator. And we'll talk more about that next week. Also, next week we're going to have somebody from parolarights.org. There's a homeschool family, the Reimecke family from Germany, who are being persecuted by our government. And what happens with this family will greatly affect schooling in America. They're a German family who sought refuge here. You may have heard about them. They were legally granted refuge through the courts here in the United States, and now the Obama administration is trying to send them back. And if they're successful, it's going to change the face of education across America and your parental rights. So we'll have parentalrights.org on next week as well. Other than that, folks, we really appreciate you being here with us. Look for us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and we are also on Facebook. And we will be happy to help you become informed and engaged and take your country back and your state here in Missouri. Be a culture vigilante. You got to do something to take your culture back. So thanks for being with us, and we will talk to you again next week, 7 o'clock Central Standard Time. God bless.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.